Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, the podcast where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your handicapped host, James Koch. I have another interview today. That's awesome. Mr. Dennis Willis is here. He's been all around the world and then some. So we're glad to talk to him. Hey, Dennis, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, James. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be anywhere. You know, I'm almost 70. It's great. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me tell you something, right? You do not look 70, brother. You look like, I don't know how old you look, but you do not look 70 at all.
Well, it's all this clean living that I've been doing. You know, think that's it?
Yeah. I think that's it, yeah. Especially like clean living, like you're eating healthy, right? I mean, because you are a musician and you got to keep fit and you got to keep your vocal cords clean and intact, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, and I drink a lot of water and I changed some things a few years ago in my 40s. I was trying to get a little more life insurance and I went to see a doctor that I didn't know. I had just moved to Georgia, my wife and I had, and he says, well, I'm going to put you on a statin because your cholesterol is a little high. And I said, well, why didn't you ask me to change something? And he goes, well, because if I ask my patients to change anything, you know, I'm afraid they'll kill all of them because they're not going to change anything. And I said, well, put me into 5%. I said, I'm going to go get some running shoes. And I didn't know what I was talking about, but I went out and did a little, started changing some things. And, you know, and dietary wise, I don't really do anything different, but I'm careful. Like one thing I do, James, is I'm really jealous and protective of my sleep, because I've learned that, you know, that's the secret weapon for people. You know, when you sleep like restorative sleep, you know, you get all of your ideas. Like I go to sleep with ideas for songs and I wake up with the song. Yeah. And that happens because of restorative sleep. But, you know, most of us don't sleep enough, probably. But I do, and I'm not crazy. I don't sleep 12 hours a night or something, but I sleep like 7.5 is my number. Yeah. So, and that seems to help, you know.
I'm more like a night owl. I get the best stuff done at nighttime. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me, how I'm wired, you know.
My wife is exactly the same. I get it.
Thank you. Yes. But I try to get at least 9 hours. You know, I try to go to bed at 12. Wake up around 8 or 9, you know, because nine to 10 hours is basically all you need, you know, for a good night's sleep, you know?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And then I do a little, I don't tell anybody, but I do a little power nap every day too, about 20 minutes. No alarm clock, no nothing, man. I lay down, I sleep 20 minutes is all. And I wake up and I can do the rest of my day, right? So.
Well, I'm jealous of you right now because you said you don't have an alarm clock. You know, I wish I could wake up 20 minutes later without anything going on. But me, I got to have my time clock. You know, I love time clocks.
Yeah.
You know,
everybody's different, James. That's what makes the world go around, brother.
There you go. Yeah. So, all right. So you said something about you wake up with a song in your head, you know, and I am. Well, when I researched you, you said that I learned that you wrote like 500 songs in your whole lifetime, correct?
Yes, sir.
So that's a lot of songs, but I mean, you lived a great life, you know, so far, and there's so many more, you know. So do these all come in like dream forms? Because you said you wake up with them, you know, or do they come like this for the moment, or?
You know, so my first song surprised me because I didn't play an instrument of any kind. and so I was driving home from a date one night when I was 17 and I wrote a song. driving home.
Yeah.
So, you know, because there weren't phones and stuff then, there was no way to record it. So I had to try to remember it. So I just kept singing it. And the next day, I went into my job. I was selling furniture, and I was working full-time, going to college full-time, or going to school full-time. And I went in, and my boss always kept his Ovation guitar under his desk. Mm-hmm. And so all day I'm singing this song, James, because I'm like, I don't want to forget this. I like this song. I don't know what's going on here, but I'd like to know that I wrote one song, right? So anyway, toward the end of that day, he goes, Dennis, what are you singing, man? You've been singing that song all day. And I said, well, it's a song I wrote, you know, driving home from a date last night. I don't know if it's any good. And he goes, well, why don't we sing it? Let's see. And he pulls his guitar out, James, and he plays the song and we sing it together. And when we finished, the hook was set for me. I mean, I could just feel it, you know. And he said, look, that's a really good song. That's got a nice chorus, a hooky chorus and all that. So why don't you go buy a cheap guitar and learn some chords and see if you can write some more songs. And, you know, and if you don't like it, since you bought a cheap guitar, you can just give it away to somebody. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's no risk here kind of thing. And so anyway, and so I went out and bought a guitar and I started learning chord progressions. And you know what, James, I couldn't learn chord progressions without hearing lyrics and the story and stuff. And so, you know, eventually I wrote enough songs to make my first album that came out in 1980 of all times. And then I made a rock record in 84 and it was picked up by a record company. It was an EP. It was six songs.
Right.
They wanted to make it an LP. So I recorded three more songs and it had nine called Man of Steel.
Yep.
So I had Face to Face, Man of Steel. You probably maybe heard that when you were looking around. And then, you know, I did an album in 95 with some fabulous, fabulous players. The Peter Gabriel's percussionist, and it was crazy. And the principal cellist in the Houston Symphony, and the guy who produced King's X. I mean, it was a crazy group of people. And they kind of did it for free because they loved my music and cared about me.
Yeah.
And then I did a record in 2000. And you know what? I came home and told my wife, James, I said, you know what? I produced this record, Songs from My Window Seat.
Right.
And I said, you know what? I'm not going back in the studio. Until I can find somebody who's an arranger or a producer, because I'm not either one of those things. And but I'm going to keep writing as if I'm going to find this person soon. But you know what happened? I didn't know what I was saying. 18 years.
18 years
went by.
One time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't go in the studio at all for 18 years. And then in 21, in 19, I met this guy. It was in a little river band who's a great friend of mine. We had lunch.
Yeah,
and Rich, it was just Rich Herring. It's all kind of miraculous, man. And so now we've done three, no albums for 18 years. And then of course, Strong just came out. And so that's my third album in the last 5 years, brother. And I don't, it's hard to explain, you know?
Well, okay. So let me tell you what I think about. Okay. So prefaces, me and Dennis talked a little bit before we got on. And I told him I love his music. It's so good. But going off of that, I listened to three albums pretty much back to back, like I told you before. I listened to What Love Makes Us Do. I love the title song, title track.
Thank you.
If I Live to Be 100, I also love the title track, you know.
Thank
if
you.
I Live to Be 100 came out in 2023, What Love Makes Us Do with Rich, you did in 2021, correct?
Right. Yes, sir. Yep. Right.
But I just recently left to the Strong album, and Bigger Than Me is my favorite song of all time on that album. It's so great, you know.
Wow, that's great to hear. Well, let me tell you, can I tell you the story about Bigger Than Me?
Please. Yes.
So Rich Herring, my producer and great friend for like 15 years, this was a guy I was never going to ask to help me, okay?
Ever, right? Yeah.
Ever. I just knew who he's working with, James, and I'm like, why would he work with me? And so, anyway, if you want to hear that story about how that happened,
please,
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But so, you know, so in, I'll just tell you, in 18 or 19, somewhere in there, 2018, maybe, I came home one day and I sat down with my wife, who I met on a blind date. I've never gotten over it. And she said, she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, I'm not okay." I said, "You know, I've been writing songs now for 18 years. And I put them in a drawer and I said, I'm afraid I'm getting old now. I'm in my mid 60s at that time. And I said, I'm afraid I'm going to die and all this stuff is going to be in a drawer and nobody's ever going to hear it."
Right.
And so she said, "Well, you know, you got that prayer list that you pray through every morning for an hour." And she said, "Why don't you put something on there for yourself?" Well, there's a novel idea, right? So I did, and I put something on there. So within a couple of months of me putting this on there, James, we're going through Nashville and we're sitting in this big Mexican restaurant, cavernous. By the way, it had great reverb. Okay. And I know this because during the meal, Rich is sitting across from me and he says, "Hey, what are you working on?" Because I know you're always working on something. And I said, "Well, I've got this new song called Why Not Me that Susie thinks is the most commercial thing I've ever written." And he goes, "What are you going to do with it?" And I said, "Well, that's the $1 million question. I don't know what to do with it."
Right.
And he goes, "Well, why don't you sing it to me?" And I said, "Here in the restaurant?" He goes, "Right now, sing it a cappella."
Here we go. Right.
So I sang the first verse and chorus of Why Not Me, and he stopped me. And he said, "Wow." He goes, "You know what? I didn't know you were writing this kind of material." And he goes, "So let me produce this song." Yeah. And I said, "Well, do you want some really good Nashville singer to sing on it?" Because he lives in Nashville. He knows everybody. Yeah. And right. He said, "No, no." He goes, "I want you to sing on it." And so we did that song. And then we did the song I Can't Remember off of the What Love Makes Us Do album, sort of Roy Orbison-ish thing.
Right.
And then he called me and he said, "Look, I know when something special is happening. So let's make an album." So that's how this all started. And so we did that album in 21 and we submitted it to the Grammys and it made the first Grammy ballot in 5 categories. Mm-hmm. And then we did, If I Live to Be 100 and we submitted it to the Grammys. And it made the first Grammy ballot in 5 categories. And I'm not going to win a Grammy, probably, James. But, you know, but there's some committee in there that thinks it's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And so then this album, Strong, so Bigger Than Me, let me just tell you. So that the guy who co-wrote Bigger Than Me is Rich Herrings, my producer's best friend and has been for 20 years. And this guy is a marvel. And, I mean, he is like a creative font that never turns off. I mean, he's written a couple thousand songs. He's got he's got poems and, you know, he's got poetry and a novel. It's crazy. So anyway, and so I met him through Rich probably 3 or 4 years ago. His name is Mark Hauser. Well, Mark Hauser goes in last. Okay. You have a question?
No.
I thought you were stopping me.
No. Keep going.
You know how to stop me. Just hold your hand. I'll stop.
That's okay.
Anyway,
yeah, you got it, brother. You got it.
Last, probably June of last year, he was having a little tummy trouble and he went in to see his doctor and it turned out that he had metastatic pancreatic cancer.
Ooh.
And his doctor said, "You got a couple of months, man." And so he called Rich. This is what artists do when they find out they're dying, by the way. He called Rich and he said, "Look, I got 2 albums worth of material. I want to record these albums and get them out before I die. Will you help me?" And Rich said, "Come straight to my house right now because you're not going to feel like singing in 2 months. And I'm going to turn on the click track and play with my acoustic and we're going to put your voice down now." And that's what they did.
Yeah.
And then they made this 2 fabulous records, man. Crazy. They're so good. And so the second call was to me, and I'm in the book business. And so he goes, "Hey, I got 2 books I want to put out. Can you help me?" I said, "Of course." And so those 2 books are on Amazon. One is called Seeds, and one is called Some Other Somewhere. Well, after we did all that, toward the end of last year, he called me, and he goes, "Hey, I want to do one other thing before I go. I want to write a song with you. I said, well, I'd be honored to write a song with you. You've written with the best. Yeah. And, you know, and I'd love to be in that group somewhere. And so he said, I have a title I've been carrying around in my billfold for the last 5 years called Bigger Than Me. And he said, as you might guess, that title means something different today than it did when I wrote it down.
Mm.
And because I'm facing something bigger than me.
Right.
And so here's the title. I'll send you a few lyrics and stuff, some ideas I have, and then you do whatever you want. Mm. And so we wrote Bigger Than Me, and I took it to Rich, and it made it onto this album. And here's a little piece of irony for you. So today, so Mark outlived everybody's expectations. He had 14 months he lived. Okay. He had 5 songs on a Grammy nominated bluegrass record, and he got to go to the Grammys themselves in February and go to the after parties. And so he still felt pretty good and everything. He passed away last Friday the 31st, or Thursday the 31st.
Yeah.
His service, James, is right this afternoon, this evening in Nashville. And so it was a huge loss for all of us. We love the guy. But, you know, he also taught us all how to finish. You know, there wasn't any
complain about,
you know, poor pitiful me or any of that. He just kept going. And so, anyway, it's beautiful. So,
well, it's first
I'm glad
of
you
all,
like it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry about your lost your friend. That's hard, you know, for anybody, you know.
Yep,
it is. But I could tell he was such a good guy by the way you talk about him, you know, and that's very rare to find those kind of people nowadays, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But let me go back to when you said you were in a restaurant with Rich, and he wanted you to sing. Okay, let's go back to that. Before then, did you know you want to actually record your stuff, or did you want to write for people? Because like all kinds of singers now, you know, they wrote for people back then, but now they're starting to show their face. Were you one of those people who wanted to stay away from the limelight, as one would say?
Mm-hmm. You know, those are great questions. I can honestly say, James, I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I love the creative process, man. I just love it. And I love the feeling that you get when you start working on something and it gets really difficult and you go, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to finish this or not, you know?
Yeah, right. Right.
Right. Because you always feel that. I've written 2 books. Somewhere in the middle of them, I was thinking, nobody's going to care about this. What am I doing, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. They do care, and I think it's sort of the artist mentality. It's the imp that sits on your shoulder that says, James, you know, why are you doing this? To stop you from doing it. And so I love the process. I could probably never live in Nashville and get into a room with people and say, okay, let's just write something together and make sure it has pickup trucks and, you know, all that. I write about things you can tell from the work that you listen to, you know, I write about things I care about.
Yeah.
And I also have a really deep desire to say for other people what they cannot say for themselves. I guess I'm an empath.
Yes.
So I see people going through something and I think, well, I've never been through that, you know, in Bigger Than Me, the last verses, you know, she's gone. She's never coming back.
Yeah.
I've been walking the floor. That whole thing about your spouse leaving you, you know, I've never had that. I've had the most beautiful marriage a guy could ask for. But so I don't know anything about that. But somehow, James, I'm able to put myself in that person's shoes. You know, Worth My Time. If you listen to Worth My Time, that was written with the great Alan Chamberlain, who wrote I Can't Make You Love Me for Bonnie Raitt and The House That Built Me. He's a Hall of Fame writer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we talked about it. We both have happy marriages. It's like, but, you know, but we're kind of in the minority. And so what about somebody out there who's going through difficulty with their spouse, or even worse, there's some sort of physical or verbal abuse and, you know, that, how do they get strong enough to be able to say, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not taking this. You're not breaking me. Okay. Well, that's what that song is about. So I have a deep desire to do that. And when I sing, now I'm out doing house concerts all over the place.
Okay, so we're going to get there in just 1 minute. I gotta say this because I think it needs to be said, especially to you. All your songs that I've heard throughout my time listening to your music, it sounds very, very personal to you, you know. And I think that you like to write about what people need to hear instead of something that people want to hear. You know,
so that's beautiful. You said, James, thank you. Wow.
Yes,
that's a nice compliment.
Cause if people feel like they've been there too, like what you've been through, that people can tell, you know, what's fake about music and what's not. I mean, come on, you know, I mean, and your music is just 100% truth right there, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's high praise. And, you know, and what that's different from is, trying to hit a moving target that is the public's taste and stuff. I don't know how to do that.
Right.
You know, and I don't know if I even care if I don't know how to do it, you know. But what I do find is that people are very attracted to these recordings. And I think in large part because they go, oh, well, that's how I feel. But nobody's ever been able to explain it to me in 3 minutes, you know? And so that's just the highest praise you can give me. So thank you for saying that.
Well, I strongly believe that you have some music that people need to hear, you know, because nowadays it's all about pop music. I can't stand pop music now, brother. It's like so you know, it's so fake now, you know? And you hear nothing but the devil and demons. And I wasn't into that stuff back when I was in high school because I thought that was cool back then, you know. But now it's like open bias and, you know, so I can really pick up when somebody is genuine over music and you,
Well, that's right. Very sweet of you to say, James. And I, you know what, and I'm, look, at the end of the day, I don't know, you know, somebody asked me, I had a lady from Nashville who's in the music publishing business talk to me a few weeks ago, and she said, so what's your definition of success? And I said, well, I want people to leave my gigs. And look, every song doesn't sound hopeful. The song Blind is not hopeful. It's about a guy whose wife is gone. Our girlfriend is gone, and he said, "I'm just going blind for you. I don't know how to go forward." Right. So every song is not happy, but if you think about it, James, if you see a painting and it's all the same color, as a rule, it's not great. It doesn't move you.
Right.
But if it has a little shadow and things that cause you to, oh wow, okay, and you're looking around. But in the end, what I hope people leave with, there is some shadow in these gigs and records and stuff. I don't pull any punches, but
no. Right.
But overall, what I hope is, I hope people leave hopeful, because life doesn't have to be. You don't have to lose hope because you're in. You know, and look, Jesus said, "In this world, you will have trouble," and He didn't say might. He didn't say maybe. And the truth is, you meet people of every kind of economic status and everything, and guess what? They have trouble, and they think nobody understands their trouble. And that's just not true. And so what I hope people do is they leave going, hey, you know what? I've got trouble, but I'm going to get through this. And that's, to me, if that happens, then I'm as successful as I can. That's a hit record for me.
Yeah. So. Well, all songs do not need to be happy and full of joy. You know, sometimes you need that sad song to you know, cater to people who are going through some sad emotions, you know. Because listening to a sad song, for me, I can be happy after I heard that song, you know. It's just it's weird how we have music does that to me, you know. And I'm getting thinking about it.
Where did the blues, how do we get to the blues?
Right.
If you can't, I mean, the blues are just that. The blues are saying to somebody, hey, listen, I get it. I get yeah. You know, right. So.
Okay, let's touch on what you were going to talk about earlier. House concerts. I've never heard of that. could you guide us into how you got into this and how this all works? You know, because this is a brand new thing I'm hearing for the first time.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. It's almost brand new to me. Okay. And I had played every kind of venue. I've played theaters. I've done clubs and churches and, you know, you name
everything.
It.
Everything.
And yeah. And so a few years ago, somebody said, you know, you should start doing house concerts. And here's how they work. So and think about this. Okay, how warm these rooms are. So you, James, you go, hey, I got a friend, Dennis Welch, who's a Grammy. His songs made the Grammy ballot. He's in town. He's going to come sing at my house. Mm-hmm. And so bring a cooler and a chair, and we'll have some little finger foods and stuff, and Dennis will do a concert for us. Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's a warm room because you got a bunch. This guy brought James. All of James' friends are packed into a room to hear you. Right. It's beautiful is what it is.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, unlike a club or anything, even a church, you know, people get to the end of the show and they don't feel like they got to run off. You know, they come up and talk to you. And a lot of you, it's amazing what yes. I hear. The bridge to people that music builds is second to none. I mean, it's crazy. And so, you know, there's a little tip jar, or maybe somebody, if they're particularly bold, you know, will say, hey, we got an entrance fee of $20, and right. people will pay. You know, we'll make a little money on the night. We're not going to get rich doing it. but we're not going to get rich financially doing it.
Right. Yeah.
But we're getting enriched by doing these things. And so we're in Quincy, Illinois, for a show tomorrow night in the park here in Quincy. And then we go to Ohio for two house concerts. And then eventually we'll make our way to New Hampshire and Maine and West Virginia. And I think in Connecticut, I'm not positive, but okay. Anyway, and then we'll head back south. You know, I live in Texas, so.
You live in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Texas, Austin.
And where are you now, James?
I'm in Lexington, South Carolina.
Okay.
My dad's a retired colonel, and he retired in South Carolina, Sumter, in 99. So we lived here up until I moved in 2017. It's great for me, you know.
Where in South Carolina? What's the town again?
Lexington.
Lexington. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
That's about like 20 minutes from Columbia, you know, the state capital. Yeah.
Uh-huh, right, yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, so okay. Right, well, good for you. Yeah. Good for you. I like the South myself. Yeah.
I know. So the only problem I have with the South now is the heat. I cannot.
It's the heat. I know the summer.
102 degrees. I'm like, how do I survive this? But I do.
All right, you know? I'm with you. Well, I'm in Illinois right now, and it was 84 or something degrees today. My wife and I got out of the car and said, "Wow!" But you know that we also don't have to worry about a snowstorm.
Yes. So. But I'm glad that summer is almost over because I love the fall. You know,
October, yeah, November. Me too.
I've been thinking about going to visiting Nashville in the fall because I've heard
Nashville
is so beautiful and so pretty. And the fall, can't be the fall. Anywhere you go in the fall is great, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. Well, I hope you get to do that. Have you been to Nashville before?
I have not. This is my first time going. My mom and dad said it's – my mom wishes she could go with me, but, you know, she has a hard time. You know, because she's got the inner ear balance, so it's hard for her to.
Oh God!
Every
sorry.
Time she stands up, yeah. Well, I mean, she's a tripper, you know. So I mean, but she says I'm going to love it when I go.
Yeah, you will. And you know what? And I am. And even though I'm a songwriter and a musician, haven't done hardly any of the touristy stuff there.
Right. Yeah.
But I want to go to the Songwriter Hall of Fame. I want to do that stuff. But every time I'm in Nashville, I'm working, you know, and I'm like, wait, everybody else gets to go there.
Yeah. I tell you what, when I go to, I'll connect with you and say, are you free this day, you know, these days, and we'll go together. How about that?
Well, if I'm in Nashville, I will. You know, I'm in Texas. Yeah, I'm down outside of Austin. So, right, but that'd be great. I'd love that.
Because my mom and dad said that I need to visit both Grand Ole Opry houses.
Yes, you do.
That's great.
So do you, James, you're a musician yourself?
I try to, but I'm not good at it. I do have 6 guitars, but I don't play.
Wow.
I don't play at all. But I got it like a PRS, two Jacksons. I just bought me a Fender Highway Series. You know,
lines.
That's probably my favorite guitar because I love acoustics the most. But the reason why I don't like acoustics mostly is because they have fat bodies, you know.
Right, they're harder to play. They are.
Yeah. So the thin line it's perfect for me because they have so thin of a body. I just had to get me one, you know. And I bought on sale. So yeah.
Cool, man.
I've seen the clay guitar, but I don't really play them, you know. And I can't sing. I can sing, but not really well, you know. I was singing in the shower. Of course,
like
but
nobody
wants to reach the right. Yes, but nobody wants to reach anything. But okay. So you are a songwriter. More than that, you are a storyteller. You know, because your music, you know, reflects on your life. So, so in writing all your 500 songs up until now, what's the quirkiest real life moment you ever thought like? That's a song waiting to happen. That's a song waiting for me to write.
Well, you nailed it, James. So so when I married into my wife's family, they were from, and look, my family was not, it wasn't like my family was all Harvard graduating attorneys. Okay.
Bye.
But her family was just different, man. I tell the story in my gigs about the fact that that her family, like, do you know what a malaprop is?
No, sir.
Okay, a malaprop is where somebody says a word, it's really close to the right word,
okay,
but it's not the right word.
Right. Okay. I a ton of those.
And sometimes they say it elegantly, and you kind of hate to go, well, that's really not what that is.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so her family had generational. Everybody had like her granny, her mother, and then she is in the other room, and there, you know, she would say things, and you go, that is not the right word. Okay. Well, anyway, so. So the other thing was that her family some of her family were kind of hillbillies. Okay. And so her Uncle Joe came down to see, this Uncle Joe is on, If I Live to Be 100, there's a song about my Uncle Joe, Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
Well, Uncle Joe was a piece of work. Okay. If he came to your house, he brought his own spit can. And he wore overalls, and if he came to your social event, he would bring his cow and tie her up in your backyard because he thought she had a touch of separation anxiety, right? Kind of weird. So he came and stayed at my house for 2 days when his wife was having some medical issues, and he brought his own spit can. He had his overalls on. We talked a lot.
Okay? Yes, yes.
And he pointed at me a lot. He would say, you know that, Dennis, you know that. You know that man did not go to the moon. You know that. That was all done, you know. Well, so anyway, when he left, he was driving away, and his wife was better and everything. And they took off down the road, and I sat there with Susie, and I said, you know what? I got enough material for 10 songs, okay? I said, but here's the one I'm going to write. And so the song Uncle Joe – If I Live to Be 100 album is the one, and James, people love this song, mm-hmm. and they sing along on the chorus. And here's what I've learned: Everybody has an Uncle Joe, okay? Everybody.
Yes, yes. Yep. I do too.
Everybody's got that uncle that you go, wow, I don't know what he's doing, you know? Anyway, right. But he was a great guy. He actually fought in the Korean War. He was a wonderful guy, but he was just a piece of work. So anyway, and you know what? When I finished the song, I said, you know what? I'm going to play this for his son. And if his son says, no, that sounds like you're making fun of Dad, you know, then I would have just put the song away and never released
it.
We met in we met up at Susie's dad's, and I said, come on upstairs, I want you to hear something. And I played it for him, and James, he started laughing so hard at the very beginning of this song, and he never stopped the whole time. And when he was done, he goes, oh my God,
yeah,
that's Dad. Please put that out there. Put it out there. So anyway, so there's quirky stuff like that. And there's a song on the Man of Steel record called Don't Touch My Genes, about genetic engineering,
right,
that people seem to really love too. And and it was kind of a weird, like, what? You know, what are we writing about? You know, people didn't get it, but I did. So.
Well, good old Uncle Joe. You know, I don't know the guy, but I love him already. You know, he seems like a cool dude. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
We do have a few more questions for you, and I thank you for coming on. But okay, so I have three fun questions for you. Okay.
Okay.
They're really fun. I think they are. Okay.
Okay.
So we've known that you sung for audiences far and wide, right? What's the most unexpected thing that somebody said to you after a show? You know, because you finish up a show and people come in and say, "What's the most like?" Funniest or most like off the wall, you know, thing that somebody mentioned.
You know, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's funny, but I have people, and I used to, especially when I was younger and I was touring some, young people would come up to my record table back when there were records, you know, LPs.
Yeah.
And I would, they'd buy a record and I would sign it, you know, and they would say, you know what? I want to be a songwriter. That's what I want to be. And so how do I do that is their question.
Right.
And my answer to them, James, is, you know what? I said, look, let me encourage you. If you want to be a writer, you should do it. Okay. Whatever. Don't wait for, you know, somebody to tell you you're okay. Just go do it because it's good for your soul.
Yeah.
Okay. And but here's my question for you. When you get in the car and you drive to the grocery store, and you turn your radio off, do you hear things? Do you hear music? Do you hear a story? Do you hear a great line? And as far as, do you hear anything? And if you don't, I don't know how to make that happen for you, but I want you to be able to do it. And so, I've always gotten a lot of that from people. And I love being an encourager. In the Austin Songwriter Group, I was in that group for a while. When I first got to Austin in 05, and I was the song doctor. So every Tuesday night, I would be encircled by people bringing songs in and saying, okay, here's what I wrote this week. You know, what do you think? What can we do with it? Well, sometimes the answer is, I don't know. I don't know if this is fixable. Okay.
Right.
You know, like somebody, an old man told me about my first car. It was belching and making crazy noises. And I pulled into a filling station. And this old crabby man came out, and I said, so what do you think I should do with it? He goes, well, if it was mine, he goes, I would jack the radiator cap up and drive a whole new car under it.
Right.
And so that's kind of how I felt about some of the songs that I heard, you know?
Yeah.
But I've had great conversations with people that, you know, like, a wonderful conversation with Neil Young's brother, Rusty Young. We opened for Poco one night, and and Rusty loved. He said, "Wow, just love what you're doing." And then we opened one time. You know, Carrie Livgren from Kansas, who wrote "Dust in the Wind" and all that. You know, he started a band called AD is the name of the band, and they were kind of a Kansas clone. You know. Right. And I was so nervous, James, opening for that guy. I'm like, oh gosh, I'm opening for the guy who wrote "Dust in the Wind." We gotta be good, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so when the show was over, I walked off the stage and I felt a tug on my sleeve, and it was him. And he pulled me to this, to himself, and he said, "That was fantastic. I loved it." And that's all I needed. I didn't even need money to get paid. So, you know, and so a lot of it is that. And then I think the other thing is that people do come up and tell me what we talked about earlier. You know what? I'm going through the same thing you sung about, and I feel like I can maybe go on now because somebody else understands. So I, you know, I don't get a lot of funny because my music, you can hear it, it's not terribly humorous. You know, but it is happy. I mean, it's joyful, you know. So.
Cool.
Did I answer your question?
Because it must feel so good that they understand that what you've been that you've been through, what they're going through at that time that they heard the song.
That's so
great and so, you know, spiritual.
Thank you. I hope so.
So let's just so when you go on tour, do you have a tour bus?
No. I finally have a little sound system. When I started doing the house concerts, I hadn't played out much. Right. So I went and bought this little suitcase, like something you would do on a street corner kind of thing, with a board and two speakers, and it wasn't much. So I bought a new system for this year. And you know what? Our car had almost 200,000 miles on it. And so we went out before we started this little tour we're on now, and we bought a brand new Nissan Pathfinder. And you know what its nickname is, James?
What's that?
The tour bus.
Yes.
So, yes, I do have a tour bus, but it's
Yes and no, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
So my next question, that falls greatly with my next question, okay? So we're going to say, if your tour bus, quote, unquote, right, what would your tour bus's theme song be, you know, if you had one? You know, what?
Well, right now it would be the theme from the Beverly, I mean, no, from Sanford and Son.
Dun, 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 dun. All right.
Yeah, it's just packed with stuff. It's
a, like James, a makeshift one,
You can't see out of it. It's like, I hope all our stuff is in here because nothing else is going to fit, you know?
Yeah.
So the theme song would be from the Sanford and Son. You know what they did, right? They were junk dealers.
They got older chairs and whatever,
Right, exactly.
But I'm sure you've said before, if we left it, we don't need it. You know, that's what I say all the time, you know.
I hope that's true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be somewhere else and forgot like a speaker or something. That would be horrendously bad.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
So you need your speakers, everybody. So make sure you pack them.
Because I don't want to do it a cappella.
No. Yeah, right.
I already did that.
Well, I do love a cappella stuff. You know, I do, and I do love acoustic stuff. So, have you ever done like an acoustic a cappella? You know, like if you forgot, you know.
Well, yes, a couple of weeks ago. Okay. Your timing on all of this, James, is perfect, okay?
That's great, yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, my 94-year-old father-in-law, Susie's dad, remarried, and he married a 90-year-old woman. He married a younger woman is what I tell people. Mm-hmm. And his wife wanted two songs. She wanted one of my songs, which is about surprise love, called Until the Stars Fall.
Right.
And then she wanted the Lord's Prayer sung at the end of this service. And I also had to get my license because they wanted me to help officiate the service. So I had to pay $50 for a license or something. Oh. But so you know, the Lord's Prayer is one of those songs, James, like the national anthem. You know, everybody starts out singing the national anthem with a lot of gusto, you know. And then all of a sudden they get those up to that down. Spot.
All of a sudden
it gets a lot quieter, as you know.
Yeah, because they don't know the lyrics, right? Yeah.
Right, or don't know the lyrics or can't sing that high note. That note is crazy. Well, the Lord's Prayer is also one of those songs. And so what I did was I didn't want to not do it. I wanted to honor their wishes, right?
Yeah.
So I tried to find some easier chords to play the song, and there aren't any. Okay. There's even online, I couldn't find any, right?
Right.
So what I did was I practiced, I played it in C. I played just a C, and then I sang it a cappella, or I played a G, and I kept trying it in all these different keys, because I wanted to find the one, James, where I wouldn't have to stop in the middle of it because it's too high, right?
Yeah, right.
And so it was a G. And so I sang, I was more nervous singing this song than I've ever been doing any concert I've ever done. Right. I mean, you're at a wedding, right? And, you know, this is only going to happen
and
one time.
Lord's
you
don't prayer, wanna, well, you know,
it's the Lord's Prayer. And you don't want to have somebody video and go, oh, boy, let's go watch that guy who had to stop in the middle of the song. Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so, you'll get a viral video after, you know.
yes, that's for the wrong reasons, though.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but anyway, so I sang it a cappella. And Susie, my wife, said it was okay. So,
okay. Just as long as the wife approves.
I've done it, but I don't prefer it.
Okay, so we got a couple more questions for you, and then we'll let you go. Okay, so writing all of these songs, like, is there one choice of food that brings up more of a inspiration more than anything? You like snack or food or drink, or like does something bring out more? You know, ideas, I guess.
You know what? I don't know if that's, okay. I don't think I have anything like that. You're asking if there are certain things that I eat that maybe cause me to have some creativity.
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah.
Well, no, not really.
No. Okay. Yeah.
No, because, you know, I've never really been a drinker. Okay. I've never taken drugs, and so I don't really know anything about it.
Right.
I don't know what that might do to me, you know.
Right,
I mean, I'm already kind of weird enough as it is, right?
Oh, no.
So, I really haven't. So it,
okay.
it and
yeah.
the thing is that here's the other thing is I can't really tell you, James. You know, a few maybe a couple years ago, AARP magazine did a story about Bruce Springsteen and the opening lines of that are so telling. He said, you know, I have kind of a weird job. He goes, I go into a room and I make something out of nothing. And he said, and I can't explain it to you after it's done. I can't explain it because it feels like sometimes a song just flies around me and lands on me. I feel like I shouldn't even take credit for it because I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
And That's how it works for me. I there's no rhyme or reason to it. I was on the treadmill one day, and the song on If I Live to Be 100 about homeless people somewhere in these ashes, that title literally just scrolled across like that in front of me, and I felt like I saw it for a second. And then I thought, wow, what was that? Somewhere in these ashes. So I took my phone and I wrote it down, right? And then, you know what? Just like always happens over the next couple of weeks,
it just comes to you. Yeah.
It became so. I wish I knew what kind of food I could eat to make it happen.
Hey, man, I hear spicy food is good for sleeping or something. You know how they say different foods bring out different stuff. You know, I just figured different foods might bring out more easier or like, you know, inspiration or writing.
Well, if you figure that out, James, call me.
I will let you know. Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah.
Sir. So let's go all the way back in the time machine, okay? Let's go back to, say, when this was 14, 15, 16, okay? Let's go all the way back, okay? We're looking around your room, your teenage room, okay? Are we seeing any musical posters? And if so, what are on the wall musically?
Well, James, you know what? No, there were no posters necessarily. And I didn't have any instrument. I didn't play an instrument at that point, but... But I did listen to the radio and I had some favorites, you know, and here's a little story for you. So one of those favorites was a guy named B.J. Thomas. So B.J. Thomas sang Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And,
He
had so many huge hits.
Yeah.
And he was and I saw him in the Astrodome when I was maybe 14. I saw him in Houston's Astrodome. I saw him at the rodeo and I remember him singing. I'm thinking that is the coolest darn thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they rode him around the rodeo in a in a convertible, and he sat in the back and waved to everybody. I thought, man, that guy's cool, right?
Yeah.
Well, fast forward. One day, toward the end of the 70s, I get a call from a friend of mine who's a promoter. And she said, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm going to college. That's what I do, you know, going to school. It's Tuesday after all or whatever it was. And she said, well, B.J. Thomas is coming in for a gig. I'm bringing B.J. Thomas in, or the organization I'm in. And I wondered if you'd want to pick him up and his brother and his piano player at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, are you kidding?
Right, yeah.
And so I got to meet B.J. Thomas. And when I was probably in my early 20s, and it was the coolest thing. You know how sometimes you worry about meeting your heroes because you think, Oh, boy, if he turns out to be a difficult person, mm-hmm. then I'm going to feel bad.
Right, right.
He turned out to be a prince. And
nice.
So the next year when he came back to Houston to play, and he was born and raised in Houston, so he filled up the places he played there. He asked for me to be the guy picked him up. So the next year I picked him up again. And
nice.
One of my sort of white whales would have been to get a song to him to sing. That would have been amazing. But, you know, he passed away.
That's always like a hit or miss, you know, like you just said, you know, you never want to meet your heroes because you don't know what they're going to do, you know.
That's right.
But I'm so glad that he was so nice to me. I don't think I met anybody that's ever been, you know, mean to me personally, you know.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I try to meet them before the show. You know, I don't want to meet after the show. You know, because they're tired. And they want to. You know,
yeah,
so I try to go before the show and meet them. But yeah.
Who's your favorite person you've ever met, James?
I met so many people. It has to be I don't know if you know the Christian metal band Demon Hunter. But they were they were really, really nice to me. I met them before the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I met Zach Wild. I met a lot of people, you know.
I
just can't think of favorite one, you know, because these are the guys that I listen to on the radio, you know, musically. And, they did so much for me in my life, you know. So I really can't pick one. Yeah. But I'm so glad that BJ was there.
It did go well. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now I got two of the hardest questions I'm going to ask for you today.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. So we're going to do like a Mount Rushmore of your favorite artists. Okay. You have four because obviously Mount Rushmore has four heads. Okay. Who is your four main favorite artists right now? It could be from any genre, any era, anything. That's your four.
Well, let's just start with Paul Rodgers, the best singer from Bad Company.
Yes.
My favorite rock singer of all time.
Yeah.
He could sing the phone book, and I would want to hear it, you know.
And I still think that he's the perfect replacement for Queen. I know that Adam Lambert's good, but Paul Rodgers just.
He's a perfect replacement for everybody.
Anybody, right? Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, I'm a huge James Taylor fan.
Yes. Okay.
And I finally got to see him in person a few years ago. He did not disappoint.
Nice. I actually saw him constantly. I saw him with Bonnie Raitt.
Yes, that's when I saw him.
Oh, yeah. That was a few years ago. Yeah.
And you know what the coolest thing about that was, James? So we're sitting in this big 10,000 seat room, and, you know, and it's like you're in his living room.
Right.
You know how he does? He came out at the beginning of this show, and the light pops on. It's James Taylor. There's nobody introducing him. It's just him.
Yeah. He just pops out of the door. Right. Yeah.
Like he's in a nightclub or something. Right. And he goes, hello. Hey, thank you all for coming out and everything. I'm like, wow. Anyway. And so when Bonnie Raitt opened for him, she sang I Can't Make You Love Me.
Yeah.
And while that was going on, I texted my friend Alan, who wrote that song with Mike Reed. And I said, so Alan, what is this like? what is it like to sit in a room with 10,000 people singing your song like this with the artists? It's so crazy. It was a wonderful experience. And so James Taylor, absolutely. I mean, B.J. Thomas for just pure singing probably is up there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a period when the band Foreigner was so commercial. You know, the Foreigner 4 album is just, it's like one hit song after the other, and it just, it gets caught in your head and you can't let it go. Mm. You know, Roy Orbison is, Roy Orbison might be at the top because of, because he was an operatic singer. You know how great his singing was, but James, he wrote all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, too. And like, okay, so you can sing like that, and you can write songs for yourself to give you a chance to sing like that. And so, I don't know, he's way up there near the top. There's not a lot of current artists. I mean, Sting has always been interesting to me.
Sting.
You know, because I think he's a real artist that just does what he wants to do and, you know, whatever the muse leads him to do. Yeah. And so, I don't know. That's those are probably just off the top of my head. There may be some I think about after we're done.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we'll have you back many more times. And to go back and to go back with Foreigner, it feels like the very feels like the first time is my ultimate favorite song ever made.
It's a great song, isn't it? Great, yeah. I love this song too. I've been waiting for a girl like you.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, that is just I shouldn't have sung it because it's going to get hooked in here.
Right, exactly. You're going to be singing it, but they're a great band. So go ahead and sing away. You know. So okay. So last question is hardest question yet. Okay, is there one song, album, or singer that you can listen to right now, but you cannot tell me or your wife or your fans how it makes you feel deep inside your soul? Like,
wow.
Like when you hear the song, you're like, oh my God, I can't explain it, how it makes me feel inside, you know?
Well, yeah, I can tell you.
Perfect.
Because my buddy and I in 1971, I think it was 71, I wasn't driving. I was 15. My buddy was 17. He was the smartest guy I ever knew in my life.
Yeah.
We're driving along. He's driving. We're in his 1960 Ford. So there was nothing special on his speakers and all. There wasn't any of that. It was just an old ratty radio.
Beat up jalopy, right?
Beat up jalopy. And you know what? And we were talking away like the young guys do. And then all of a sudden, the song Starry, Starry Night by Don McLean came on. And it was like a hand came down in the car, and we listened to the whole song, and then we drove another 5 or 10 minutes, James, and still didn't say a word. And I thought, you know what? When I finally spoke, I think I said something like, you can do that with words and music? And so I eventually... I still do it. I'm going to do it tomorrow night here in Quincy. I'm going to sing Starry, Starry Night. I eventually recorded Starry, Starry Night myself. And I had to pay Don McLean's publishing company like $50 or something
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to help him keep his lights on, the guy who wrote American Pie. I don't think he needs it, okay?
No,
but anyways, that song is the song that if I hear it right now on the radio, it moves me in a way that no other song does.
Right. Yeah. That's so amazing, you know, because I have songs like that, you know, but I can't tell you how it makes me feel, which is great, which is your perfect response because you can't explain it, you know. It's so deep inside your soul. Well, you're like, oh, my God.
And look, James, that's the thing. Art should do that to us.
Yes.
It shouldn't be art as commerce all the time. Like, how many of these did you sell and everything? But no. How many people did you move? And, it's for our next conversation, just remember this little snippet right here. You know, my worry about AI is that I think it's terrible for our souls if it's going to create something that we can't create.
Right.
For human beings to think, you know what, that machine does it better than me, I think that's horrible for us. And I don't think that machine, that soulless machine, will ever be able to say for you what you cannot say for yourself. Right. And so that's the next conversation we have. We'll talk about it.
And I did want to ask you about AI, but yeah, we'll definitely have you back on more.
I know. I over-talk, probably.
Oh, no. You're perfectly fine. So let's give you a big shout-out here. So everybody listening can go to DennisWilchMusic.com. You can contact them. They just got merchandise on his site right now. He's got CDs. Going to click on store.
I'll sign those CDs and we'll mail them to you for I think they're 15 or whatever they are. And then
He's got three CDs. If I Live to Be 100, what Love Makes Us Do, and his new album Strong, which is great. Everybody should hear it.
Thank you. They're all on the streaming services. You know, that's the other thing. They're all out there.
So. Right. Yeah. Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, you know, whatever you can have. And are we on Instagram, Facebook, and everything, you know?
Yeah. Mostly Facebook. I have a music page. I'm not a great self promoter and I'm a lousy social media guy, but I try.
So. We're getting better, right? We're getting better. You know?
Yes, we are. We are getting better.
And how can people contact you about those house concerts or home concerts? Or
if they go to DennisWilchMusic.com, it gives them a chance to subscribe, and it also gives them a chance to just write me a note. Either way,
got it.
If they subscribe, they put in their email address, and then one of us, probably me, reaches out to them and thanks them, and they'll get a newsletter from us and all that. We do a once a month newsletter that says, hey, here's where we're going. Here's how to get in touch with us, yada, yada. But they can also come to the website and have a contact me page there, a little section like do. And they can just say, hey, can I talk to you about having a house concert? If they do, I'd love to chat with them. Sure.
Nice. Well, I'm definitely going to subscribe with you because I'm always curious about where that person, that musician is in the world right now. You know, that's always fantastic to me, you know. At least I want to be a musician, but I don't know. I can't play guitar yet. So, but we are going to do that one day sometime soon.
Yes, you are, Dan. You will.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to thank you for coming on and being such kind soul to me. And please come back anytime you want to, okay?
I will, James, and thank you for having me. You're great at what you do here. You know, there's a statistic out there that says every person, James, the guy who parks your car, the guy sleeping on the park bench, every person can do at least one thing better than 10,000 other people. And you know what? This is one of your things, bro. You're really good at this. So great questions. And so far, my favorite of these podcasts that I've done in this little group that I'm doing right now, this has been it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I mean, so much.
See you again sometime.
Oh, okay? Yeah, you did. And we'll play in the Nashville together, right?
Let's do that. I'd love to.
Yes, sir, brother.
All right. Have a good afternoon. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.